Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird Wilt.
And we've got a really fun episode for you today. We're doing something a little different. Normally, Grace, Haley, and I, we do these episodes. We ask each other what we think about some Star Wars topic. But then we thought, what if someone else asked us questions instead? So today we have a special guest, a fellow journalist who we all really admire. His articles have changed national policy. He's won multiple awards, and he's been on news shows as illustrious as Fresh Air with Terry Gross. So obviously this is a bit of a step down for him, but for some reason he agreed to do it, and he is the perfect person to conduct this hard-hitting interview. He's my friend and former coworker, Dan Diamond of The Washington Post. Dan, welcome to Hoth Takes.
You know, Fresh Air is popular on Earth, but Hoth Takes is popular in a galaxy far, far away. So I actually think this is a major upgrade. Thanks for having me.
Would you say this is the Fresh Air of the galaxy far, far away, if I can be so bold?
I see it more as the car talk of the galaxy far,
okay.
Far away.
All right.
Maybe this episode will be a little Fresh Take-esque and Fresh Air-esque, and that I will be quizzing you on all these questions that have piled up in my force-curious brain.
Excellent. Well, Dan, fire away. We'll see what we can do for you.
Well, I just want to say first, I enjoy Hoth Takes quite a bit. It is a show where I feel like I can understand the language, but not fluently. I am not, the force is not strong in me. If anything, it is fading a little bit. I'm a little Star Wars skeptical, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to ask for your expertise in decoding things that have just piled up and bothered me the more I've tried to get into Star Wars in recent years. And I realize some of these questions may be pedantic. Maybe they'll be enlightening. I don't know. I think there's a high risk I may antagonize some of your listeners. But as someone who sometimes antagonizes the White House, I think I might be more worried about your listeners than the White House. But why don't we just start with this? I'm curious how people learn things in the Star Wars universe. Is there a galaxy-wide CNN that updates when the Empire captures different planets? Is there a Politico for Coruscant, or I'm not even sure I'm saying it right, but is there a Politico for Coruscant with updates about which captain is in charge because Darth Vader killed so many others? Or is everything just word of mouth? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, they call it the HoloNet, and it's essentially the internet in Star Wars, but it's like a combination of the internet and like TV, like cable news. So like, it's just holographic. It's interesting because it's never really made clear like the hierarchy of the system, like if it is analogous to the internet in terms of how it's created and how it's set up and how it's run. But there's like news broadcasts. The Empire has like their sort of propaganda people who will talk about like the latest rebel bombing. But there's also an internet feature, like the books will talk about how you can access like library records and you know, archives and stuff like that. So there is like at least that central source, and I think it's kind of analogous to like the internet combined with your TV guide. And yeah, the Empire will like censor it, you know, during the war and stuff like that. So how much access people can get varies, but yeah, there is that kind of resource.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think even pre-Empire, the HoloNet did have a fair amount of propaganda videos. I believe that when the Clone Wars were going poorly, that there was some propaganda that they talk about, at least in the Revenge of the Sith novelization, about the Jedi, and Anakin is called the hero with no fear. But something I always wondered is, you know, where are the actual journalists in Star Wars? Because we see a lot of propaganda, a lot of arms of the state, and it's not exactly like we have these hard-hitting journalists over here in the galaxy far, far away. Even the stories about journalists tend to be about how they get into more propagandizing careers. So that's always kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, there are very few of them. There's a couple in like the books and like some of the short stories. There's like a couple of them who exist, but they're not kind of front and center in the story.
So is there a Jim Acosta in one of those stories who challenges the Empire at a press conference? Like, does that guy survive even one press conference?
I think it's like less sort of like confronting like power directly and more like dispatches from the field of like, here's this battle and here's how it's going. And like, you know, my recollection, there was like some stories about one person who reported on battles during the Imperial era. And like, I think that, you know, it was a rough job. It was not exactly, you know, it's not as safe as it is, you know, reporting from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Hmm. So in The Force Awakens, did Han have to say, what did he say? He said, "It's true, all of it." Did he have to say that because they have a fake news problem? Like, is that what he was running at?
I think it was more that it's hard to believe some of these stories about like the Jedi and like all these incredible adventures that he went on. And so he's basically saying, listen, like, yes, I'm, it's kind of a humble brag, Dan, if you think about it, because he's basically saying like, I am Han Solo. Everything you've heard about me is true.
Okay.
And like, I'm a legend.
Well, he also was very cynical in the original trilogy. But I do think that that's an interesting turn, because in the, I guess it's A New Hope, Han Solo is sort of this kid who's like, oh, the Jedi are, you know, that fake religion or something along those lines. So, I mean, I do think a major point of that is just people don't have as much access to information.
I mean, think about like the Phantom Menace, right? At the beginning of that story, it's the blockade of Naboo. And Queen Amidala goes to Coruscant and says, basically, I need help for my planet. And the Trade Federation senator, and Dan, I don't know how to explain to you why corporations have senators, but they do,
well, stands up. Too.
And yeah, exactly. He stands up and he says, basically, fake news. This is not happening. She's lying to you. And that was one of the moments that always struck me, like, where is the press? Like, where are the journalists? Like, where's the press corps? Where's the traveling pool, you know, going to Naboo and filming like holo images of the suffering? Like, maybe they couldn't get past the blockade, but then at least you have the images of the blockade. Like, I guess that always struck me as weird.
There's also a lot of things, and we've sort of pointed this out, or at least it bothers me every time, but like in the Clone Wars, which I'm sure, Dan, you have not watched, but it's the cartoon show and it's very good. There's sort of this plot where one of the clone troopers sort of discovers there's like a brain chip to make the like clones comply with Order 66, which is to kill the Jedi. And in a moment like that, what you really need is to like to be able to have like a whistleblower moment and talk to the press, and they're just totally missing. And the other thing, there's no institutions that are like, hey, I wonder where this giant clone army came from, which would have been a really relevant question to ask, and one that the Jedi didn't even really look into themselves. And that's another instance where like to have a robust press corps would have been useful.
Yeah, the check on power. So you've said several times that you're not sure what I've seen and not seen. I've seen all the movies. I've seen The Mandalorian. I read back in the day the Timothy Zahn books.
Which, oh, look at you!
Which I thought were great. And I played.
You're a real fan.
Here's the thing. I was, and I loved the game, the original TIE Fighter video game, where you're the bad guy. You're behind the wheel. Or I guess behind the cockpit. But I have fallen out of love a bit with Star Wars. I just find increasingly that I'm, rather than excited when I'm done watching, I'm disappointed or just confused. Like with Boba Fett, I tried to follow Mandalorian with that. And after the first episode, I was like, what did I just watch? And then I came back when The Mandalorian returned. And then by the end of the season, I also felt a little underwhelmed. And I haven't
seen
Kenobi. Yeah.
We also felt that way after the first episode of the Book of Boba Fett,
and actually like it.
And it did not go away at the end of the Book of Boba Fett. We still felt that way.
Dan, can you give us your comprehensive ranking, or maybe even if we want to save time, your top three Star Wars contents? It doesn't even have to be a movie. Like you said, you liked like a video game or something.
It could be hot takes.
It could be this podcast.
In terms of time engaged, it may be Hoth Takes, just given recent years. I liked the episode a few weeks ago where you talked about a government in Star Wars. That was up my alley. Let's see. I loved the Gennady. I may be saying his name wrong. The guy who did Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah.
Clone Wars. I thought that was awesome. Those short the short clips 20 years ago or whenever that was. I thought that was great. I thought the TIE Fighter video game was great, and I thought Empire Strikes Back was great. And Mandalorian is really enjoyable. I watched that with my wife. She loves Grogu, though she still thinks his name is Baby Yoda. But either way. But beyond that, I cannot bring myself to watch Kenobi. I'm not even sure if Kenobi's the name. Is it Obi-Wan or Kenobi, the new show?
I think it's technically Obi-Wan Kenobi, but we'll accept anyway.
and I just, the last number of movies, I would go with my brother. We would get really excited and walk out looking at each other, feeling confused and disappointed. So
hold on,
though. I think
did that apply with The Force Awakens, the first episode 7? Did you enjoy that one, or did you come out of that one, like you said, sort of disappointed?
Okay, that's a good question. So came out of it initially pretty thrilled. But the more I reflected on it, the more I thought, geez, this was just the first trilogy and the first movie.
No, you're right. You are right, Dan.
However, it's still a perfect film. And when you talk to kids. Though. So I think my theory of this is we're all just getting older. And so we cannot like physically enjoy things the same way that we used to as kids. And when you talk to kids about the sequel trilogy, The Force Awakens is, and I'm basically a kid, and I've like, that's the one that people watch like 8 times because it's great. The other ones, nobody watches that like 8 times. Like even kids, the Last Jedi and the Rise of Skywalker, because they're both trying to correct the previous criticisms of the previous films. And it's just messy.
So what year did The Force Awakens come out? Was that 2015?
I think it's 2015. Yeah.
So I remember when the first trailer came out, because I ran to like the coffee shop down the street when I heard that it was coming out and watched it in the coffee shop on my headphones over and over again. Like I was that excited about Force Awakens. And I don't think I've been as excited about Star Wars since that moment watching that first trailer.
I mean, it is a very common reaction, right? I mean, The Last Jedi took things in a very different direction. It was a huge tonal shift. Rise of Skywalker did that same thing, but with a little bit of an attempt at what the director thought was course correction, but in fact, I think made things worse. That's a pretty, I would say, Grace Haley, would you say it's a widespread view that The Rise of Skywalker was a bad sort of a bad outing in the Star Wars saga?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been a great trilogy. And in fact, when you think about how much promise it had, how much excitement there was in 2012 when Disney bought Lucasfilm and said, we're doing these movies. I mean, the ratio of promise to sort of product, I don't think there's ever been like a bigger kind of mismatch. And not even in terms of the actual final product, but how people perceived it. Because there was a lot of disappointment with The Last Jedi. And I know that even though I liked it, these are not movies that have been universally well received.
You know, I think we went through the sequels again a few months ago to do episodes about them. And I think summarizing it, the biggest error for the two follow-ups is just that they didn't keep like the three main characters together, but more so that they didn't make Finn the main character or like the same level as Rey was, because he's so like, when you rewatch the Force Awakens, like so much of that movie hinges on like his personality and like just how great he is with the other characters, like almost every scene. So I don't know, that is my theory of where they went wrong.
I will say too, I hate to kind of toot my own horn here, but I was very lucky in that my employer, the New Republic, a very Star Wars friendly name, they let me write an article about Star Wars and specifically the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. And in that article, I talked a lot about the struggle of the Star Wars fan, which is to constantly be trying to recapture that sense of magic and wonder that you once felt in whatever the media of Star Wars that you loved was, whether it was the TIE Fighter video game or The Force Awakens, or for me, when I was 12, I really loved Attack of the Clones, but you're always trying to regain that magical feeling. And you keep watching with the promise that someday you will feel that again. But most of the time, that just isn't the case. So not to promote myself, but totally to promote myself, you should read that piece.
Grace, one of the questions on my list was, you work for the New Republic. you work for the New Republic. When you got the job offer, did you know what job you were actually accepting? Or did you think that this was Princess Leia coming to you in her hour of need?
Yes, I did definitely think that it was Mon Mothma personally hiring me.
He's not going to know who that is, Grace. You got to go with the more
mainstream. No, I know her. She's the lady in the first movie the first trilogy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Go on.
Listen,
yes.
He's read the Timothy Zahn books.
That's true.
Enough.
She runs the government.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. No, but that has often been pointed out to me by fellow Star Wars fans. And actually, when I have Googled my own Star Wars related article, I made the mistake the first time of Googling the New Republic Star Wars, which obviously...
Not very helpful.
Not very helpful. Took me straight to Wikipedia and not to my own article. But yes, it is a fun little just something enjoyable for myself.
If you had a choice, would you rather work for the Old Republic magazine, the High Republic?
Wow, look at you. You did your research,
yeah,
Dan.
That's a great question, actually. I am partial to the Old Republic more than the New Republic. I mean, I love the Jedi. I really do. And the High Republic, unlike Eric, I have not yet read the High Republic books, and I'm not as much of an expert on that, but it seems like a pretty dope time. But I will say that were I to live in the galaxy, I would prefer the Old Republic.
This next question may be pedantic, as opposed to the other questions, which clearly weren't. But at the end of Boba Fett, the Mandalorian got Anakin's old ship, correct?
It's just another of that type of ship. It's not. I don't think it's ever established that it's that exact ship.
Okay, that actually wasn't the pedantic question. The next question is the more pedantic one. So he's flying between planets in that little ship now. How does he sleep or go to the bathroom, or can you just get instantly where you want to go?
I've had that exact thought.
That is actually an extremely common question in the wake of that episode. We actually discussed that. I think I brought it up on our episode, which is like, you used to fly around in a gunship that had like plenty of room for you to store your bounties and all that stuff. And like, I don't know, there was a weapons locker. Like, what is your game plan here, dude?
It seems so uncomfortable.
Grogu is also riding around, but he's just in that little gunship pod, right?
Yeah, he's where the droids used to be to help navigate and stuff. So now he's just hanging out there.
Okay, so there doesn't appear to be a lot of shielding for protection against the radiation of space. Will this affect Grogu's growth as he's trying to develop? I mean, it seems like a health risk.
I mean, there's a lot we don't know about Grogu's species. Maybe they're just like naturally thick-skinned and not super impacted by radiation.
Radiation resistant. That's why Yoda lived so long.
They're like the tardigrades. They can survive in extreme environments.
Here's another question, health related, stemming from my day-to-day work in real life. So on Earth, we are constantly seeing disease outbreaks when species mix together. You have swine flu in humans mixed with pigs. Deer got COVID from us. We have monkeypox in real life. Is there Wookiepox in Star Wars?
You know, I don't think we actually see a lot of evidence that like the combination of species that are very different and that have very different lifestyles in close proximity has actually caused any outbreaks. I could be wrong about this. Somebody out there who, you know, who might remember some comic that I don't might correct me, but I don't actually think that's ever been a problem in Star Wars.
There is that series of episodes in, I think it's one or two episodes in the first season of Clone Wars, where they're dealing with a flu outbreak on Naboo, but that was created by a megalomaniacal scientist.
Oh, the blue shadow virus.
Yeah,
a classic.
That was it.
Yes, that's right. But that was like engineered to kill clone troopers, basically.
I have Googled this, and it's there are viruses and deadly things in Star Wars, but it does seem like they're mostly constrained to their like to the species. Like it hasn't jumped to different species. Like I'm looking at one that's specific to the Mon Calamari people, or like there's even some where like a Sith Lord engineered something, sort of like the Clone Wars thing, or things that happen because you're on a specific planet or like you've been in space too long. I don't know. I do think though, like
as opposed to like interspecies like mingling.
Would think almost like the Columbian Exchange. Like when you start having a galactic empire or like a civilization that's it's so easy to travel between planets. There must have been some like really bad plagues like a long time ago in the Star Wars, I don't know, universe. I mean, there must have been when they like started, I don't know, traveling to different planets and interacting with different, you know, aliens. But that's sort of inference. I don't really know the history of it.
Did you say the virus was the blue shadow virus?
Yeah.
Listen, Dan, the names in the early seasons of the Clone Wars were not, they weren't putting all their creative energy into coming up with the names.
It was blue. I don't know if you could tell, but it was blue and it was sort of misty.
The scientist also had a German accent too.
Oh, he was
which
evil.
Was a bit on the nose.
Yeah, it wasn't, it was not their finest work, but.
It was, I mean, it's good to teach that to kids.
To teach that German scientists are evil?
Sorry.
Do you think there were reporters on the HoloNet probing to see if the government response to blue shadow virus was appropriate or if there was political interference?
As I recall, that episode literally had an element where the danger came from the possibility, because the good guys went into this lab and were, I think, going to destroy it or whatever. But I think there was a contamination like conundrum for them, and so there literally was a lab leak hypothesis in this episode. So that was a story point to my memory.
Amazing. I feel my passion for Star Wars increasing now that I know it could provide me with ideas for my real life work. Oh, here's one. This is something I've wondered my entire life. Has there ever been an explanation for why stormtroopers are such bad shots and so easy to kill? Is it they can't see anything out of their visors? Do they have brain damage from being reprogrammed? Is it something else?
Eric, I feel like you'll have the most coherent. I do, like, canonically, there is a former clone trooper in Star Wars Rebels who complains, having tried on the new stormtrooper gear, that, like, it's messing with his vision or something, or that it constrains him. So, like, there is this sort of implied, like, something changed that makes it worse. There's also a not unsubstantial portion of the internet which sort of sides with the Empire and says the benevolent Empire is firing warning shots to these terrorist organizations instead of just shooting to kill. So there's that theory.
I was going to mention that. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was ironic or not.
It's very ironic.
That's like me saying, like, I could be a professional basketball player, but I'm choosing to make room for, like, all the other, like, young folks out there who want to have this career. Like, obviously, I could dominate and I would be picked first in the draft, but I'm choosing to step back magnanimously.
That's heroic of you.
Out of my own choice. Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, so I don't know that there's an explanation in terms of the whole Empire. I do think that at some point it's been established that, or maybe this is still just a fan theory, but I kind of feel like it was established in canon that on the Death Star they were deliberately missing because Darth Vader wanted them to get away so that he could track their ship, which is what he ended up doing, you know, track their ship to the base. So they needed to get away. But I can't remember if that's ever been like wedged into some book somewhere or if that's still something that like is just kind of a fan theory.
This is like when I don't file my story on time, but I tell my editor I'm just waiting for the perfect moment in the news cycle when it finally will pop. I guess I have a flip question to this, which is in one of the recent movies, I think it was the Rian Johnson one, where the, not the rebels,
the Resistance.
The Resistance, thank you. Where the Resistance is running away and Laura Dern stays behind to ram the, not the Empire,
the First Order.
Thank you.
This is great. It's like Mad Libs. I love it.
She's going to ram the First Order ship. Why don't they just do that all the time? I don't understand that. It retroactively makes so many of the battles completely confusing.
This is another great question. Dan, I feel like you don't realize how good your questions are, but this is something that like people were complaining about after that movie, that it shouldn't be that easy. And the next movie did try to explain this by having somebody say, why don't we just do that? And somebody else said, oh, are you kidding? That was like a one in a million move. And like it had to be those exact circumstances with that exact arrangement of ships and space. And I don't know, they did not really explain why it was so special and couldn't be replicated. I guess the theory is the rebels don't exactly have a surplus of ships and couldn't just be throwing them at the Empire willy-nilly, whereas the Empire could very easily do that. So that doesn't fully explain it, but it's a great question, Dan. It's not really one that's been answered satisfactorily.
It's a lot of yada-yadding, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay, next on my list, I just have Cad Bane, ?
Coolest, like, coolest guy in the all of Star Wars.
Is he, though?
He is!
So he's a blue cowboy?
Oh, I can't believe you're skeptical about Cad Bane. Dan, he is the best character in Star Wars.
So this makes sense. This makes sense because Dan has only seen Cad Bane in the Book of Boba Fett, which is objectively the worst appearance of Cad Bane. I mean, his hat isn't big enough.
No, it's not big enough.
It's very important to me that you know that in the Clone Wars, his hat is much bigger. You need to know this. The brim is
Dan, does that change your opinion, Dan? Let's just go to Dan very quickly. Dan, now that you know that his hat is canonically bigger, does that change your opinion of him?
How much bigger are we talking? Like
how much
comically
larger?
Large? Like
it's no, really
like,
large.
Like in a way that is intimidating. Like that must be unwieldy.
Why is that intimidating? When you shouldn't I feel sorry for him that he can't like dress himself? I mean, like why is that helpful to his intimidating?
So
features?
For the context, this Cad Bane was a defining moment growing up for many children who watched the Clone Wars cartoon because he seriously was the coolest character on television, and seeing him in real life was cool. I think I agree with the questions you have about him, just like without having the context of the Clone Wars. But this only emphasizes the need for you to watch the Clone Wars more than anything.
Yeah, you should. The thing about Cad Bane is that he's very much modeled on the sort of lone gunslinger character in old-timey westerns. He's the black hat. He's the bad guy who has still a hint, a whisper of a moral code. He's just the coolest, but it's
just
very
doing
much...
like kidnappings and like fighting Obi-Wan and Anakin at the same time. And he has these shoes that like allow him to fly. I don't know. Wait, was it shoes or was it his belt?
I think it was his shoes.
I don't know. And it's like 90% the voice. 90% the voice is what makes him as cool as he is.
If he's so cool, why did they name him? His name is like Jerk Evil.
It's like, exactly. Dan, that's not even
about.
The worst of it.
He knows what he's about.
There's a character in the Clone Wars whose name is Savage Opress.
I love Savage Opress.
And but see, that's the thing, is you hear Grace say that, and that sounds like that internet meme. We won't say the name because there's a swear word in it, but if there's a famous meme of like the classic background Star Wars character that gets everybody excited, and like you think that Haley is just doing a parody of that right now.
Yeah.
But she's sincere.
So wait, can I just say real quick about Savage Opress? So my boyfriend and I, we watched the Clone Wars together, and now we have this kind of running joke that started ironically, but now we do it completely unironically, where whenever there's a word like package, we'll pronounce it Package Opress. So I'll be like, okay, I have to go down to the front desk to pick up the Package Opress. So that's just one of the ways that Star Wars has melted my brain, but in a very silly way.
I'm pretty sure that Sauvage Opress is also like a Johnny Depp cologne, but I may be wrong. I'm less an expert on Johnny Depp than I am on Star Wars. I have actually a pretty serious question, as opposed to these goofball ones, which is about the conflicts in the fandom. And I say this as someone who, again, like enjoys Star Wars, follows it, but is hardly fluent. When I was growing up, I remember when I was young, there was a fight over Obi-Wan. Did he lie to Luke when he said, you know, in a certain point of view, your father was killed by Darth Vader? And it was basically a plot change that was worthy. They were trying to retcon it because originally Darth Vader and Luke's dad were going to be different, I think, but then they did the retcon and it was a little messy, but most people were okay with it. There were some people who were mad. Then George Lucas remade the movies, and I remember there was the fight over did Greedo shoot first or did Han shoot first? And that made a lot of people angry because it was a deliberate change that messed with their memories. It didn't seem to improve the plot. It felt like a betrayal of Han. And then more recently, The Last Jedi, and I guess The Rise of Skywalker to some extent, took these scenarios to the extreme. There are movies that changed dramatically what fans thought about so many of the characters. And I bet if you just graphed the anger and frustration over, say, Greedo shooting first versus the decisions in The Last Jedi, like it just seems like people get angrier and angrier. So I guess my question is that anger growing because the stakes warrant it, where the universe is that much bigger, and once you change something, there's so many fans that it just feels that much more disruptive. You're shaking the pillars of the Star Wars universe, or is it just getting worse and more argumentative because that's where we're going as a culture, that people just like to get angry now and it's easier to do it on the internet? Or am I totally wrong and people have basically been this angry about changes dating back to the original Star Wars?
I think that's a really interesting question, and it's one that I've wrestled with as a Star Wars fan, because so many Star Wars fans are really toxic, particularly towards Black actors and women characters and creators, and it's just, it can be really frustrating and feel like the rest of fandom is giving us a bad name. But I think that speaks to your larger question. And I think partially it's that as the universe expands, there is more to be angry over. I think it's partially that people feel very in a proprietary way towards Star Wars. They feel like this movie represents their childhood character, and if it's being messed with, that means something fundamental about their lived experience is being messed with as well, as irrational as that may seem. And I think part of it is about the toxicity of online social media fandom culture and the direction that our culture is taking in general. It's really kind of hard to pin down where that anger is coming from and how justified it really is. But it's definitely something that I think all Star Wars fans should be wrestling with.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I think you hit on a really important point, that the more the universe grows, the more that this feels like you know, a place that has depth and nuance and sort of a sweeping scope. You know, the more of it there is, the more precious it feels and the more important it feels to not create inconsistency, to not break something, quote unquote. And that goes from like a factual kind of retcon, right? Actually changing something in a way that you can't just hand wave away, all the way to a characterization choice that maybe doesn't feel like what you think it should be, right? So, you know, changing who shoots first, that's like you're making a factual change there. Having a character in one movie act differently than in another movie, that's not a factual change, that's a characterization change. But fans have really started to equate the two in terms of the idea of it being blasphemy that you would have somebody portrayed in a certain way when clearly they're supposed to be portrayed in another way. You know, we get very possessive about these things. But, you know, as Grace said, there is also this element of online fandom accelerating and accentuating the instincts that have always been there in some of us to criticize something because of a perceived threat to our lifestyle or because of a perceived lack of care. You know, you don't think of this, you don't treat this the way you should. It's so holy and you're careless with it. You know, that's very much been there since the dawn of entertainment. I think if you ask people, you will always find that there are people who get mad about stuff like that. But it's never been easier to create a group of like-minded people who are all willing to be angry about the same thing.
I am really grateful you mentioned, you said both holy in describing some of this and blasphemy. And just talking, I think there's sort of this discussion, usually in conservative circles, more religious circles, that, you know, politics is sort of becoming this like secular outlet for people who no longer, I don't know, have any kind of religious affiliation. Like everything takes on this like life or death, evil versus good sort of tone to it. And when you describe Star Wars that way, I do think, and I know it's maybe overstating it, but I do think for a lot of people, like, maybe this in some ways occupies that role in their lives when it should not.
Yeah. yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely true.
I think, I don't know. And I don't want to overstate it because it, especially where it relates to politics, because people do bring that up in politics a lot. I mean, it's been a crazy, there's been a lot going on in politics, and I think it's fair for people to have very strong opinions about it. And I don't think a lot of like our current polarization can be explained away by that. But I do think finding value in, I don't know, things like this, where maybe you weren't as invested before, is part of that trend. I don't know. I mean, movies just take on, and Star Wars just takes on more of a, I don't know, people, it's more personal maybe for people.
And I think when you consider that Star Wars, the original Star Wars itself, is very rooted in mythology and the archetypal hero's journey, there even is more of a grounding to what you're saying, Haley, in that this is, at its very fundamental, a mythic quest that can be found in religious texts, both ancient ones, super ancient ones, and with echoes in some of the religions that we see today. So I think that Star Wars, just by its very nature, invites that kind of investment because of the story that it fundamentally represents. So I think that connection, that almost religious connection, is a really great point to bring up.
You have fans who study the text and argue about the significance. You have people who pay a lot of money to go on pilgrimages to conventions or the new hotel. Would it shock you if in hundreds of years that Star Wars has emerged as some form of religion for people?
Yes. Ooh. I think that would be silly.
Yeah, I think that a lot would have to change about how we like what we think of religion as being. What is the definition of religion? What place does it occupy, not just in our private lives, but in our public lives? I think the public element is a really, continues to be a really big distinguishing factor between Star Wars and religion, right? I mean, you have people who find a lot of meaning and even solace in the stories of Star Wars or the stories of any large fictional universe, but you don't have that connection to the public life. It doesn't have a role in institutions in the way that, you know, actual bona fide religions are very influential in public life. And I mean, Dan, theoretically, in several hundred years, you know, any Hoth takes could be a religion. By the way, if you're listening to this in 200 years and this is your version of the Bible, just be good to each other and just treat each other with respect. Don't read anything into this other than that. Just have a good time and be respectful of each other.
So I would say the only way Star Wars becomes a religion, more so than it is for people who are way too into it right now, is if there's some kind of like catastrophe that just destroys like 99% of human knowledge, all of our records, everything, but somehow Star Wars has survived. And not all of Star Wars, but like maybe some of Star Wars.
Just the Book of Boba Fett and like one Timothy Zahn novel and like TIE Fighter. That's it. That's all they find.
And Hoth Takes.
Oh, and Hoth Takes, and the Hoth Takes podcast.
And they think it is, I don't know, stories of ancestors long lost or something. Which I guess you'd, if it's one of the films that survives, it's sort of, I mean, it's a galaxy far, far away. So there's some logical leaps there. But I feel like you would have to have some very, like, cataclysmic events happen and some very ridiculous coincidences for something like that to unfold.
Yeah, I don't think that literally we would see Star Wars become a religion absent those conditions that Haley just laid out. But I do think that Star Wars is already very embedded in American culture, and that even if it's not religion 300 years from now, it might be considered more like Shakespeare, which I'm not, you know, saying that Star Wars and Shakespeare are really comparable in any way, except for potentially that grasping of fundamental stories and therefore its longevity.
Well, maybe people will come back and listen to Hoth Takes because you were the preeminent Star Wars scholars of your day. Just like the Shakespearean critics.
I'd like to think that England. We were kind of like the Aristotle of like the 21st century Star Wars fandom. You know, I'd like to think that we kind of bring that wisdom to the table, but maybe that's just me.
Oh, you are the wisest Star Wars analyst that I know. Is there, last question that I have for now, is there a version of Earth Takes in the Star Wars universe? Is there a podcast? Are there people talking about this planet Earth far, far away?
I think there are people talking about this planet Earth in the Hoth Take style here on Earth. So I don't even think we need to go that far afield. If you're wondering if there is a Star Wars galaxy out there with a podcast that discusses Earth, I think we're probably going to have to wait for the next batch of photos from the James Webb Space Telescope. That would probably be like our next opportunity to find out. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think you've just raised the important question, Dan, that I've never really thought about, which is, what is the nature of fiction in Star Wars? and that's a big question. But if there is, this kind of reminds me of a line in another great sci-fi series, totally unrelated, The Golden Compass, His Dark Materials, where Lyra, the main character, wonders, is there only one world after all that is just dreaming of others? And I think, you know, maybe if Star Wars is a dream of our world, what if we're a dream of Star Wars' world? And that is a very philosophical way to think about it, but certainly a fun one.
Somewhere Chewbacca is sleeping and dreaming of us.
Exactly.
You know, Dan, I did actually want to ask you a question, and this is something that we were talking about in the Hoth Takes group chat in preparation for this episode. You know, you're a healthcare reporter. You write about real-world healthcare. Star Wars has a very infamous example of a curious healthcare decision. You might remember this, but at the end of Revenge of the Sith, Padme, who has been, force-choked a little bit by her husband, Darth Vader, gives birth to Luke and Leia and then dies. And the medical droid says that she's lost the will to live. She died of a broken heart, Dan. So what I'd like to know is that possible? Is that actually a thing that can happen?
There is a condition when you are stressed out. It's a heart condition where you get pain in your chest. I want to say it's costochondritis, which is when it feels like you're having a heart attack and you might have some inflammation in your chest, but it actually isn't a heart attack. I mean, there are lots of ways that stress can manifest. Broken heart syndrome is real. Now, have any people in America died in pain because Anakin Skywalker or Hayden Christensen turned evil? I don't think so. I think that's kind of an extreme example. But yeah, people suffer terribly. There are all kinds of stories of someone an older age losing a spouse and then within hours or days passing on too. I don't know how old Padme was. The ages in Star Wars are very confusing to me. But I feel like they're stretching the truth in service of a convenient fiction.
Grace, Haley, any questions for Dan while we have him here? I mean, this wealth of expertise about a subject that I personally know very little about.
Okay, this is unrelated to healthcare, but if you had to choose a Star Wars character that you relate to the most, who is it?
Well, it definitely wouldn't be Cad Bane. Character I relate to the most. The problem is I can only think of a few characters. Obviously, everyone wants to be Han Solo, and my wife, who may end up listening to this, so I should probably be careful, but she grew up in a house where they didn't watch many movies. She definitely did not watch Star Wars growing up. I introduced her to the Star Wars movies probably 9 or so years ago, but she watched Indiana Jones and developed a major crush on the young Harrison Ford. So in our household, Harrison Ford is kind of a god, not to overstate it. But let's see. I can only think of a few other people. There was the guy in the video game, the X-Wing video game. I cannot remember who he was, if it was supposed to be Wedge Antilles or somebody else, but I always thought that would have been a great job, just flying around in an X-Wing carrying out missions. That seemed pretty cool. But I ultimately don't feel like I have a home in the universe because, as you said in response to my first question, there are no real journalists. Like, that's how I usually, like, identify myself when I see news people in movies or TV shows, like on The Expanse or in For All Mankind, when they've got the journalist character. I'm always like, that's who I'd be. So I just don't know, unless there's some wrinkle of Star Wars that is yet to be discovered where someone is breaking a big story about, I think you were saying earlier, Order 66, or like doing the profile of Jar Jar Binks, the New Yorker style.
Where is he now?
Yeah.
We need that.
I think the only other question that I would like to know, a Star Wars related question, is if there is a particular planet that you think that you would want to live on or find particularly interesting.
So the reason I can't answer that question is that was actually on my list of questions for you. I don't know enough about the different planets. There's Tatooine, there's Coruscant. I may be mispronouncing that. There's the other desert planet in the new trilogy. I don't know. And then there was it Canto Bright?
Canto Bight, yeah, the casino planet, the rich people planet.
That place seemed horrible. I mean, have you ever been to Las Vegas? Like, I don't want to live on a whole planet of that. So I don't know. I mean, I guess where Luke was living seemed great and pastoral in the new movies, but I don't want to have to drink blew milk out of the udder of whatever animal that was. So I have no idea. Where would you guys live?
I'm particularly partial to Dathomir, which is...
Oh, Grace. Dathomir, of course. Yeah.
This is Grace, you could literally say anything, and he'd be like, uh-huh, yeah, no, I definitely have that heard of that planet, out. For sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, mostly a joke, but Dathomir is home to some really sweet witches. Sweet as in cool, not sweet as in sweet. But they're dope. They're evil. It's also the planet where Darth Maul is from. Just a lot of cool, funky, creepy power on that planet. But actually, I'd probably want to live on Lothal, which is in Star Wars Rebels and is very pastoral and pretty.
I was going to say Lothal, too. I agree for the same reasons.
Yeah, Lothal's great. It's got, you know, these sweeping, you know, grasslands, and it's very, it seems to have, like, moderate weather. I would probably say Coruscant, just because I love that city life, and I think it would be really cool to, like, just watch the buzz of, like, galactic politics and all that stuff. Plus, it has, like, a giant, like, underworld of, like, unfathomable depth where you could get, like, whatever you want and just, like, get lost for a day and, like, maybe get, like, stabbed to death in an alley. But if you can avoid that, it would be, like, a really great, like, sort of date, like a weekend excursion, basically. But, yeah, I think Coruscant with the politics and the city life would be my place.
I was so proud of myself. I think this was the moment I decided I really liked Eric Geller. You had made some comment on Twitter about something from Star Wars, and I made a joke about one of the planets, maybe it was Kamino, and you corrected me. This was years and years ago. And I was so excited for a moment that, like, I knew what I was talking about, and I realized I had no idea what I was talking about.
Wow, that's not a very good story about me. I really thought that story would end with me looking better, but it turns out it really didn't, Dan.
Well, it's a horrible story because I can't remember the specific example of the planet, the time, the tweet. I was hoping it would, like, come to me as I was talking, but oh well.
Well, listen, you know, Dan, this has been so much fun. It's been really fantastic having you on the show. I miss working with you. I miss seeing you in the office. But it's great that, you know, you were willing to come on and quiz us on Star Wars. And hopefully you learned a little something from us.
Thanks so much for having me on Hoth Takes. It's such a pleasure listening to you, even if I couldn't always understand what you're talking about. But now I feel like I understand that much more. And I appreciate your patience with a fan who's not as steeped in Star Wars as you three experts. It was really fun.
Well, thank you, Dan, and you're welcome back anytime. And but please, before you come back next time, just watch the Cad Bane episodes of The Clone Wars. They're really good. His hat is just really impressively large. It's what you would expect it to be. So just do us a favor, watch the Cad Bane stuff, and then you can come back.
All right, it's a deal.
All right, and with that, we're going to wrap up this episode of Hoth Takes. Thank you so much to everyone for listening, and thanks to Dan Diamond from The Washington Post for being a fantastic guest. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at hothtakes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seekers. Haley is Burdenator. And if you want to follow our guest, Dan Diamond, he's on Twitter, D Diamond. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. Although, as always, for legal purposes, we do want to note that all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, and that is hothtakes.wordpress.com. And hey, if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find our show on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.